and welcome to the Plus One to Hit podcast. My name's James, I'm blind, and I'm your host. We're a disability and inclusivity positive podcast that focuses on Games Workshop's Warhammer 40,000, Necromunda, Inquisitor, and Age of Sigmar games. So, welcome to episode 14. We've got some interesting stuff for you today. So first, Graham and I get together to talk about what we've been up to and some recent releases. Then I have a special guest to the show, Rob Smith, where we talk about a really, really cool little chatbot which he's created called the Servo Skull for use with Necromunda. And finally, we have another audio short. So I'm joined by Graham. How you doing, mate?
I'm really good. How are you? You okay?
Yeah, not too bad. Bit windy today, isn't it?
Oh, it's crazy.
There's always got to be a reference to the weather, mate. You should know this by now.
Well, yeah, and to be fair, actually, we had a weird day the other day. There was in the morning, it snowed, and my car was like sliding all over the road, like trying to get out of our street. It just sort of came down in the morning on the way to work. And then in the afternoon, I had to take my coat off because I was too hot. The sun came out. It was like all the seasons in one day, literally. It was very odd.
Nice. So what have you been up to since our last show? It's been a couple of months, actually. So what have you been up to hobby-wise?
Yeah, been busy still doing some Enforcers stuff on the Necromunda side. We've got a game coming up, so I'm kind of getting back into that, getting my list ready, and hoping to bust out the paintbrush very soon to get nice. the first coats on those guys. So yeah, looking forward to that actually a lot. But I suppose my biggest thing actually in the hobby is I have undertaken my first GM role in a game. So listeners will be aware that we play the Seek and Destroy game based on the Death Watch Space Marines that James is usually our intrepid games master. But following a conversation, we decided to swap roles. So James is actually an Imperial Fist Space Marine.
Oh yeah.
Who's joined the Kill Team, and I have my character stepped away for now. He's been taken off. We don't actually know where he is. That's up to James. I wrote a mission, I've been planning it, and we've had four sessions now, actually, amazingly.
Yeah.
And that's going really well. Everyone seems to be really enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it. I've learned a lot from doing it. So, yeah, that's been keeping me busy as well.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, I think, isn't it, for you?
Yeah, it's been an interesting learning curve in terms of how to run things and how much prep you can truly do and how much you have to do on the fly.
Yeah,
I think is one of the biggest takeaways.
I have to say, it has been a really, really good mission, and the whole group's been having an absolute blast, literally in some cases.
Yeah, literally. So, there's been some interesting firefights going on.
Yeah,
there's been some fantastic theories about the story, which if they listen to this, some of them I can tell you are true and some of them you've got completely wrong.
Excellent.
But you'll find out in due course, and obviously we'll cover it on the show at some point. But yeah, that's been a lot of fun. So I'm looking forward to see how the next few sessions of that go.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just trying to think what I've been doing. To be honest with you, I've, like you, really, the only thing I've been doing a lot of is the Seek and Destroy RPG. I have been doing quite a bit of sort of Necromunda reading in terms of, House of Books and Book of Books and things like that. Couple of audio books. I finally listened to Fire Made Flesh by Denny Flowers. Actually, man, that is a good book. That's Necromunda as well. Highly recommend that if you haven't read it. Really, really good. Obviously, I listened to the audiobook version and that was awesome. I'm trying to think what else I've been doing. Oh, I did finally start on my Prometheum station kit. I've started putting that together quite slowly. I'm just sort of working my way through it and sort of building it up, but I'm not in any rush, really. I've got loads of stuff being painted by Dave the Legend. Shout out to Dave the Legend. And he's got quite a stuff he's working on at the moment. So
yeah, I've seen some of the preview pictures of what he's been working on. They are, as always, awesome.
Yes. Did you like the Wasp Mutant?
I did. That was cracking. Yeah, that was really good. So yeah, shout out to Dave, definitely. Also part of the group. But he's done a great job on those models.
Yeah, and that's really all I've been up to, mate. Not much at all, really. It's been a strange beginning of the year, to be honest, in terms of stuff.
Yeah, it has. I can't believe we're like, as we record this, it's like March. It's like, what happened to January and February? Where did they go?
No, I think we blinked.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it? But GW have been very busy over the last sort of couple of months. So, yeah, I think we're going to have a chat about kind of some of the things that have come out.
And yeah, kind new of releases.
On them. So yeah, again, this is a bit of a kind of an overview of the things that sort of stood out to us. If you guys want to check out any more, obviously head to the Warhammer community website. They've got all the new releases, background, you know, videos, all that great stuff. You can find it all on there. But these are some of the things that we spotted that were quite cool. So on the Age of Sigmar front, and these are quite new actually, they've got Khorne and Slaanesh releases. The models for these are awesome. Like, you know, as you'd expect, really. I mean, the Games Workshop models have just been, you know, probably for what, the last 2 or 3 years now have been like just amazing. You know, every model, you know, whether it's an army that you like or a faction that you're into, you can't deny the models look amazing. And, you know, these look like really nice box sets. So definitely check those out. Kind of moving then into the Heresy. Now, as you know, as you may know, if you've heard the show before, we are kind of very much into the Heresy. Yeah. As a game, instead of following it, we haven't necessarily taken up playing it yet, but as a system, it just looks amazing. Heresy Thursday is an awesome day when you head on to the Kingway website, because they always release something interesting. And there's been some really interesting stuff come out. So they have released what they call the Spoiler Squad accessories. So these allow... So normally when you buy your Mark Space Marines, you get them just like bolt guns, like two-handed, you know, sort of bolt guns and weapons and stuff. They released the special weapons packs last year that are, you know, really, really cool. And now they've brought out packs that are like chain swords and pistols.
Cool.
So if you're going for like a close combat orientated army or units, then you can use those. And again, as you expect, they're really cool. Just a bit like the, you know, usual sort of space marine ones, mixture of kind of like arms are more pointing, bending, you know, pistols are the same, so you can mix and match them and make some really cool models. They have brought out some, so we've got the Contemptor, which is a kind of standard kit. But Forge World actually brought out some Legion-specific torsos as well, yeah, nice. That are very cool, again, as you can imagine. So yeah, at the moment, there are the White Scars, Imperial Fists, the Dark Angels, the Sons of Horus, the Emperor's Children, and the Iron Warriors, the best Legion, which is very cool.
Bollocks!
You've got to get that in there, haven't you? But yeah, they're all very, very smart. So you can, yeah, if you want to... I like the idea of like using one of those almost as like your kind of lead Contemptor, you know, yeah. Almost like your veteran Contemptor. Then you could just have the rest, because if they all have them, they obviously don't really stand out.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of having one that'd be like your veteran sort of Contemptor, you know.
Yeah, I love the notion that you're seriously contemplating having more than one in the force.
Oh yeah.
It's like most people would have one, maybe a Leviathan. You're like, no, I'll have seven of them.
No, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Anything that walks, shoots, and blows stuff up, I'm all about. So, yeah. I'm all for it. Talking about stuff that shoots and blows stuff up, they've also released the Typhon Heavy Siege Tank, which is amazing. it's like, again, like, as an Iron Warriors play, you just imagine like a fleet of those just like just destroying everything in sight. They are awesome. And then they've kind of released the baby brother, if you like, which they've released a Legion era Vindicator as well, which again, as you'd expect, are both amazing and they look great. And yeah, really, really nice model. They do such a good job. And then they've also carried on with some of the accessory packs as well. Mm-hmm. So they've had Alpha Legion and Raven Guard have got, you know, the shoulder pads and helmets and stuff that they kind of like to do. But something I didn't expect to see, which is a welcome addition, to be fair, and you could use these for 40k as well. They've brought out two different sets of what they just call character heads. So I think there's like, yeah, there's two packs. It's like pack one and pack two. They've got, I think it's like 15 to 20 heads in each pack. And they're all like, obviously, you know, no helmet, like bare head and all different styles. So like some have got cybernetic, some haven't, some are more feral than others. And they're just a really cool way to like customize your characters or your sergeants.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, they are really good. And again, yeah, you can use them for 40k and you can make some really nifty looking sergeants and stuff. So yeah, fair play. And then they've carried on with the character releases as well. They've not had loads, but we've had a couple. So there's a few kind of sort of general kind of Imperial characters. But the one I noticed, they've released Exodus of the Alpha Legion.
Yeah.
Which, you know, Sniper Extraordinaire. So that's really cool. So yeah, again, still lots happening in the Heresy, which is really, really good. And we'll see where it goes going forward.
I really like their approach with how they're releasing the upgrade packs. So like you said, they're the heads and the close combat weapons and stuff. It reminds me of probably 20 plus years ago now in 40K when you used to be able to buy a special weapons pack.
Oh, that was amazing.
Close combat. And I was always quite disappointed when they moved away from that in 40K in recent years. But I'm really pleased that, you know, it's back in Horus Heresy. Because I think the thing for a lot of people was, if you wanted an entire unit kitted out with, I don't know, a Devastator Squad kitted out with a certain type of weapon, you had to buy that kit about three times to be able to get enough weapons to do it. Oh, it was just a nightmare. But yeah, I really like that approach. I think it's definitely the right way to go.
Oh, I completely agree. I think that's what I like the idea of. Yeah, I think, for example, the special weapon packs, now I'm doing this off the top of my head, but you get something like 10 melter guns, 10 plasma guns, you know, all this kind of thing. So yeah, you'd only really need to buy one box. And then you can just, you know, split them out amongst your units as you go. Whereas you say in 40K, you know, you are a bit limited. For example, like I think it's in the Chaos Havoc set. There's the, what do they call it? Is it the Reaper Cannon? Like the big sort of chain fed rotary cannon.
The rotary cannon.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I think I want to say it's the Reaper. I might have got that wrong. But either way, but you literally get like one, I think, in a box. So if you want to like you have a squad of them for like anti-infantry, you kind of end up having to buy like five or four boxes. Which is, you know, a bit of a grumble, but yeah, and a fair play on the Heresy side. I also like the fact that with the Heresy, obviously, because everyone's got the same armor, you know, obviously there's a few armor variants you can choose, right? But because it's all mostly based on legions, you could potentially have a lot of armies that look really similar. So I like the fact they've made a real effort to allow you to make your legion look like it should do, because though, even though they are Space Marines, they should all look very different.
Yeah.
You know, not just in color, you know, they all have very, very different like ornamental looks, or you know, feral looks, or you know, whatever. And I think they've done a really good job of allowing you to make your legion as it is when you read the books, right? Which is a very distinct force. And they've been better at that in 40K actually over the last few years. I think it's something we've discussed previously where
definitely in the codexes,
especially with the codex chapters. It used to be that, like, you know, if you had an Imperial Fist or a Salamander's army, it was basically they all had the same rules, they were just a different color. Whereas now, obviously, you get all the chapter traits and artifacts and, you know, rules and characters and stuff. So, but yeah, they've done a real good job of it in the Legion side of things for the Horus Heresy. So,
segueing ever so slightly here, but talking about Legions and Legion rivalries and stuff, obviously, you're well into your Iron Warriors and stuff. It's got nothing to do with Horus Heresy, but just referencing back to our Seek and Destroy, I'm genuinely enjoying playing an Imperial Fist. Now, bear in mind that I'm historically a Space Wolves player and Storm Dragons, which are a Salamander successor chapter. They're my 40K armies, Space Marine armies anyway. So I'm used to the whole Space Wolf getting up close and personal, the saga, blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. I'm used to melter guns and flamers and that with my my Storm Dragons and that kind of short to medium range sort of firepower. And what I found in Seek and Destroy is I'm really having to make myself think differently. So I'm not, as an RPG character, I'm not thinking, oh, I'm going to get in there and rip your throat out with my teeth like I would when I was, if I was playing a Space Wolf character. I'm like, well, hang on a second. My character is quite cool and collected. He's very solid. He's just like, yeah, come on, let's just get this done. And it's a very different approach because he's rocking a heavy bolter for a start, which is so far removed from what I'm used to doing. You know, I'm really, really enjoying that kind of situation where I'm having to think about things that differently. But yeah, just wanted to say that. It was like a bit of a segue, but
no, it's good. Now, obviously, I'm glad to hear that. And I think, you know, we'll talk about it when we cover the mission, but you've had some very cinematic moments with that heavy bolter. It's kind of very handy.
Oh, yeah.
And to be fair, it's actually been a really good to see, because we've never really had a heavy, we haven't had a heavy weapon sort of, you know, Marine in the squad.
No.
We're all kind of very much sort of medium to short range kind of weapons. My character, just for anyone, just so you know, is a Space Wolf Rune Priest in Terminator armor. So all my psychic powers and, you know, it is very much that, you know, getting combat. I really only sort of shoot if I'm on the way to combat.
Soften him up a bit.
Yeah, he's usually very forward, but we've never really had a dedicated heavy weapons kind of team. And to be fair, I've definitely seen the benefits of it. Like, you know, some of the things you've done so far in the mission, like we wouldn't have been able to do that as quickly because the amount of firepower you can just kick out is crazy.
And in that last session when I got full successive action, it was like, right, I'm just going to completely unload on the target. And it was just like, how many dice am I rolling? It was so cool.
It was really good. And on the flip side of that, we've got a couple of scouts this time. They've got sniper rifles that we've never had either. So that's been interesting to see how they work and the sort of things they've been doing. And they've been doing a really good job about, you know, trying to get ahead and, you know, spot things and using their scopes to see things further down the road, shall we say, that maybe we wouldn't have seen before. So yeah, it's been a really, apart from obviously DMing for the first time, it's been interesting from a squad point of view to see different loadouts and how they interact with everything. So yeah, no, it has been awesome. And that's been a nice segue, actually, onto 40K. So we'll go from there.
It was all, it was almost fun. Didn't plan that, I promise.
No, it wasn't at all. But that's the next thing on my list. So that's where we're going to go. And I think, actually, I don't believe Angron was out when we last spoke.
No, he wasn't.
But Angron is out. And the World Eaters. I know I think we spoke about the units and stuff before, but the Angron model is just amazing. I do have to get that in there. Like, it is an awesome model. And like where Games Workshop have been showing different studios versions of them being painted and stuff, it's, yeah, it's phenomenal. They did a great job of Angron. So fair play. So yes, the World Eaters are running around the 40K universe once again, causing absolute carnage. But the Imperial Space Marines have got some things to potentially come back at them with that have come out recently. So the first one I have to talk about is the Brutalis Dreadnought, which the name itself is amazing. I love how like sometimes they try and like come up with like these really nifty names that sort of mean, you know, like righteous vengeance, but like in a different word.
Yeah.
So like, you know, Redemptor or, you know, all this sort of thing. But no, they found the word brutal and just made it like, put a little thing on the end. It's like Brutalis. So okay. Awesome. Now this thing is actually based on a Redemptor chassis, but it has like two claws. So it reminds me of the Blood Angels Dreadnought, actually. The name has now just left my mind. But you had the Blood Angels Dreadnought that had the Furioso, that had the two claws. And what's pretty cool, actually, is it has those claws give it two attack modes, very Mortarian style, which is you can kind of go for like a fewer attacks but higher strength version. So if you're trying to smash into a building or a vehicle. But you also has more of like a sweep mode where you kind of, I think it doubles your attacks. So they're not as strong, but you get more attacks with them.
Yeah.
And I love that because I think it's really cool that you can have dual purpose units.
That's very similar to the Fenrisian Great Axe, which Space Wolf Dreadnoughts can take.
Cool.
They have I think it is genuinely called sweep attack, which is the doubling the number of attacks, and cleave. That's it. Cleave is the one which is higher AP and higher strength.
Yeah. So that's cool. So obviously it's going to charge in and it can sort of deal with anything really, whether it's, you know, stuck in a unit of Orc boys or it's charging a Land Raider. Basically, it's going to be able to do something, which is always good. What will also help with the fact that it has a pair of multi-melters strapped under its arms.
You did just say a pair of multi-melters, not a pair of melter guns, didn't you?
Yeah, multi-melters, I believe, yeah.
Jesus.
So yeah, this thing's pretty horrible. And then so, you know, if that wasn't enough, randomly, which I think is quite funny, it's got one of those Icarus heavy stubbers on its roof. So for against flyers. So,
well, to be fair, a lot of the Primaris Dreadnoughts and vehicles do have that. They do have that option. Yeah.
But again, like, I just love the fact that literally you could rock this thing and it's going to do damage to anything. Literally, like, you can literally charge into anything and it's going to do some work for you. So that's pretty cool.
I really like the Redemptor chassis as well.
I think I do. Really, it's amazing.
Cool size, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as much as I'm a Chaos player and everything, I actually really, really like the Primaris range. I think it's awesome. Like, all the vehicles, all the armor types, I'm a big fan. So whenever stuff comes out, as much as I'm, you know, not really an Imperial player or anything, I could quite easily be.
Yeah.
Because the models are brilliant. I love them. Actually, talking of Primaris, so one of the things that Primaris have been missing is a dedicated heavy weapons squad. You know, heavy weapons squad. I think a lot of people will still take Devastator squads, which are kind of the, you know, your regular Marines, shall we say.
Yeah.
But no more. So there are now the Desolation Squads. Again, cracking name. Love that.
Yeah, it's wicked, isn't it?
They're all like 80s thrash band names, aren't they?
Yeah.
Desolation Squad. Brutalus. You can just imagine it, can't you? Yeah. Now, these have caused a little bit of conversation, shall we say, on the interwebs, because the guns are like handheld missile launchers, so they're not shoulder-mounted.
Okay.
So if you imagine, the best way I can describe it, if you imagine like a really big double-barreled shotgun, but it had missiles in it,
right,
almost. Like, I think that's, I don't know if, maybe, yeah, yeah, maybe go, yeah. Maybe that's the best way I can think. They're very kind of like, yeah, they're carrying them in their hands.
Like proper sort of assault rifle style.
Yeah.
Are they underneath the forearms?
No, they're literally carrying them like a bolter, like you would, just this massive thing with these huge missiles. And they've got super frag and super crack missiles.
Well, of course they have. I mean,
of course, you know. So you can imagine, obviously, the frag one is very much anti-infantry and does, I think it's like strength 4 as well, which is pretty good. And then a crack one is, I think, you know, strength 8 and, you know, 2 or 3 shots, whatever. But so, yeah, they're really cool. So, you know, that's kind of, for me, like, I think Primaris now kind of covers most of the sort of key bases that the old regular Marine roster would have. They, you know, I think the heavy weapons squad was really the only thing. I know there were some things you could take, but like in terms of a 5-man unit that had heavy weapons, you know, you've got now got these guys that are pretty cool.
The only thing you really had before they came out really was the Hellblaster squad, which of course could have the plasma incinerators.
That's right.
They were really only medium range. They weren't really.
And I think
heavy weapons.
The article on the community website actually talks about that as well. That's, you know, this is the first kind of like long range heavy weapons squad. As you rightly say. So they're pretty cool, and that all really ties in. So we're still very much in the Arcs of Omen story arc. For want of a better word, GW keep dropping these like cards. They keep doing these like tarot cards online. I swear we've been having tarot cards for like 6 months. I don't know how long they're going to do it for. It feels a little bit drawn out, but maybe that's just my own opinion. But we're about to have book 3, which is the one that is based on Vashtor, who is the sort of crazy mechanical demon prince guy. That is a very cool model. He's got a beef with the Dark Angels, which a lot of people are saying is going to eventually bring out the Lion as a model, because there's been these tarot cards apparently are kind of insinuating that he's, of course, he's another classic Primarch that didn't actually die.
Yeah.
I believe he's in stasis inside the rock, which is the kind of like sort of floating fortress monastery of the Dark Angels. So yeah, they could easily have him wake up and break some skulls. But yeah, so there's a box set coming out, and there's like models, and Azrael's had a new model as well. He's now across the Primaris. Is it the Rubicon Primaris, I believe
that's
it's called?
The one. Yeah, Rubicon Primaris, yeah.
So he's got a new model as well. So yes, there's lots going on that front, which is cool. They've actually recently announced as well new models for Commander Farsight from the Tau Empire.
Ah.
Always liked Farsight. I think it's quite an interesting character. Not just from like a rules point of view, but just like the philosophical point of view, because obviously the Tau, he's almost like the anti-Tau character.
Yeah, against the grain, isn't he?
Always thought it was quite cool, like the fact he had his own bodyguard, and they always had special rules for the way he fights and the way he commanded his units to fight as a Tau player. So yeah, fair play. So a new Commander Farsight model, a new Boss Snickrot model for the Orcs.
Nice. Sort
of come with him as well. There's some new boarding patrol box sets as well. So I know GW are kind of pushing this sort of boarding patrol narrative thing as well that's going on. These box sets are mostly like foot sloggers.
Yeah.
For Mechanicus, Demons, Death Guard, and Gene Stealers are the newest ones. And, you know, it's the same as, you know, all the box sets they do. If they've got, you know, there are a saving over buying the units individually. So if they have got units in that you want, then you can actually save some money, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And if they don't, then don't buy them. Simple as that.
Because they include already existing kits, basically, don't they?
Really? Yeah, they're just a collection of kits. Yeah. So for example, the Death Guard ones, like I think it's got like some Death Row Terminators, some Plague Marines, and a couple of HQs. You know, stuff you can buy on its own, but just they put it in a box and sort of package up as this boarding patrol thing. And the last thing on the 40k side is they've just released a preview video, and to try and describe it, it's a bit like one of their kind of animation style videos they've done for Warhammer Plus, and it's very much what looks like a Tyranid eye, and as it kind of is very close in on the eye, you know, think of like Game of Thrones when the dragon wake up from the the ice kind of thing. But in Reflection is a what looks like a Blood Angels Terminator. Now, it's either a new Nids and Blood Angels box set, but they're obviously the obvious talk for us old school people is, are they going to redo Space Hulk, which was a standalone game that was traditionally Gene Stealers verse, but you can't really tell if it's a Gene Stealer or not. I'm not convinced it is or not, but you know, is there some form of Space Hulk variant or updated version of Space Hulk coming
up? Well, I've had both versions of Space Hulk, because Space Hulk is the game that actually got me into 40K way back when I was 13, so about 3,000 years ago. And that was originally, there were some Genius Stealers in it, there were some Chaos Space Marines, and you could play Blood Angels, Imperial Fists, or Ultramarines, and they were, the plastic was appropriately coloured. It was quite cool.
Ah, cool.
The second edition of Space Hulk, I've actually got upstairs in our box room, and that was Gene Stealers versus Blood Angels, and there were some really, really cool thematic Blood Angel Terminators, and you know, there's one kneeling down with his power fist down by his side and aiming his storm bolt and opening up with it, and it was really cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, I believe we had a couple of games, didn't we, back in the day?
We did.
It was good. Yeah, we'd like the doors opening and closing and all this, you know, bog heads and stuff. No, it was a good game. So that, yeah, there's some of the theory, shall we say, you know, as the internet chats, is that, yeah, is there some form of, like, you know, new version of Space Hulk, that's maybe got, kind of, you know, newer star models in it or something like that. So we'll wait and see. But yeah, lots going on in 40K, as there has been, really. I don't feel like 40K ever really has a quiet time. I appreciate it's, you know, GW's biggest sort of seller as well, so they're always going to have something coming out. But yeah, there's always, like, millions of releases for 40K to keep track of. So yeah, again, head over to the community website if there's anything you want to find more about anything that I've just mentioned, or if there's anything that I've missed that you've heard of but I didn't mention. Yeah, go and have a look on there. The last thing I want to talk about is from the wonderful world of Necromunda, which is the world we have happily embraced in our gaming group. We absolutely love Necromunda. This is a very much a selfish inclusion, I'm not going to lie.
Wonder what you're going to talk about, Graham.
You know exactly what I'm going to talk about. They have just released what they call the Sanctioner, which is an enforcer's automata, like vehicle walker thing. I believe I've said that right. Automata. I don't know. Tomato. I don't know.
Automato. It's an automata. Yeah. It's an enforcer's automata.
An enforcer's tomato is coming out. and it basically has heavier versions of enforcer weapons. So rather than like a concussion carbine, it has like a concussion cannon.
Nice.
And it has like heavy, what do they call them? The sticks. I can't think what they're called.
Shock batons.
There you go. That sounds far better than sticks, doesn't it? They've got like heavy shock batons.
Hit me
stuff
with
like
your
that.
Heavy stick. Hit me with Hit your me. Heavy. Hit
oh, quick, me. Ron, he's got a stick. and they also apparently, now I don't know whether you have to pay extra for these, because obviously it's a bit too early to announce this, but apparently they come with 5 different types of grenades.
Okay.
Which is, you know, pretty cool. You know, because as we found out on our last game, grenades can be very useful in a game of Necromunda, especially the smoke ones.
Surely it has like a standard one or two, and then you have to pay upgrade.
Yeah, from what I can tell, I think one of the arms looks like a grenade launcher arm, maybe. So I can't believe you just get 5 types of grenades on its own. We'll find out as more comes out. There aren't any official rules yet. Again, this is all very much like intro kind of, you know, advertising fluff at this point, but. The other thing that I thought was quite cool, well, 2 things actually. One, you get a box of 2, which is good, so you can mix and match parts. But interestingly, they have said they create full cover for the squads behind them.
Ooh.
Now, again, so as you know, with that's pretty cool, I think. Because again, if I'm trying to, you know, move, obviously, with forces, you know, their armor's not bad. But the idea that, you know, you can get into a decent fire position, which is ultimately what I'm trying to do. With the cover of one of these things, A is pretty good shooting on its own. And I believe there is like some sort of more close combat things as well. And there's almost what looks like the assault ram. There's like an arm for that as well. So I should be knocking down bulkheads and stuff.
Cool.
So if you are trying to move around on the Underhive and you are trying to get through a bulkhead, whatever, these things look pretty useful. So I'm quite excited about it. I might have to have a look. I mean, I don't know what rules they're in or anything, so I assume there's gonna be something, or unless they just have standalone
There'll be a book, mate. I'm sure there'll be a book.
Normally there's a book, isn't there, where they collect everything together?
Like an expansion book, and it might have some missions in it, and it'll have the rules for that, and there'll probably be something else they're going to release that will be in that book as well. I'm pretty confident that's what will happen, mate, to be honest.
Nice. So yeah, I'm quite excited by those. They look a welcome addition to the law, as we are, on this side of
it. It's very thematic as well, of course.
I know.
You've got a unit of guys moving on foot, and they've got one of those out, particularly out in the ash waste. That's the only piece of cover they've got, and of course it's mobile, so they're moving forward behind it like the old like soldiers used to behind tanks in the First World War, you know.
Yeah, and when I saw the vehicle rules for Necromunda, my first thought was, oh, it'd be really cool if they had like a almost like a kind of exosuit type thing that they could walk around in that would provide, you know, heavy weapon support and all that sort of thing. Well, these things are pretty much going to fill that role with, you know, with a bit more, which is really cool. So looking forward to that.
Nice. You know, thinking of going back to 40K just for a second, I do wonder whether the way the story's going and the way things are revealing, because we're moving forward in the 40K timeline properly now. It's not like it was sort of 15, 20 years ago where everything was static. It was all in one point in the timeline. So, you know, potentially, I mean, obviously we don't know this, so this is just conjecture on our part. Potentially we might have the lion waking up. Does that mean at some point down the line it's going to be the wolf time? Is Russ going to return?
I think it's only a matter of time.
I think it's a matter of time as well.
I mean, it's been interesting that they if you think about that, with the Primarchs in the 40K universe, they've really spread them out. Like, you know, they only come out every, what, couple of years. They're not bringing them out, you know, you're not getting like three or four Primarchs in a year, right? If you think how old, like, Gulliman was, and then Mortarion, and, you know, obviously we just had Angron. I think it's only a matter of time until, you know, Russ comes back. Because again, you know, he's just lost. He's not dead. So there's, you know, it's very easy to see how they could just turn that into a story that, you know, he's wherever and somehow he, you know, appears back on a world or whatever, you know, or he comes back to revenge, you know, avenge them, doesn't he, and stuff like that. Is that the story, isn't it? Or he said he's going to come back?
Well, yeah, he basically disappeared into the Eye of Terror.
That's right.
With his 13th company. And obviously parts of the 13th company sort of broke off and did their own thing, which is why we've got elements of the 13th company have come back into...
Love 13th company.
41st, yeah, they're so cool.
Really cool.
But yeah, so, and he basically said his last words to Bjorn were basically, I'll return at the wolf time when I'm needed, or words to that effect anyway. And that was it. And he stepped onto his ship and that was it. That was the last anybody ever saw of him. Who else have we got? Vulcan. Nobody knows if he's dead or alive, but of course he's a perpetual anyway. So in theory, he can't be dead. But then there is this whole theory as to whether he's actually been captured by a Necron Lord and is in stasis somewhere, which of course would kibosh that. I don't think anybody else is alive. Oh, Korax is alive, isn't he? I think. Jagatai Khan, can't remember. The thing is, there are some that I know are definitely dead and some that I know are definitely alive, and there's some that I don't know because I haven't got that far in the Horus Heresy.
In the books. No, it's interesting though, isn't it? Because like, obviously Forge World have just said they're bringing out, well, they're going to start to bring out the Primarchs, but as they are after the Heresy.
Yeah.
So at the moment, like all the Primarch models were kind of at the beginning of the Heresy, so they were all very much their kind of Imperial versions almost.
Yeah.
Whereas they've just brought out a new Horus, which is kind of him having turned, but still in the Heresy era. So at some point, you know, you are going to get, you know, a post, we'll call it post-Heresy, right, for want of a better word. You are going to get post-Heresy Primarchs that are going to obviously look different.
Yeah.
Especially the Chaos ones. Obviously, they've all been changed and mutilated, or mutated, sorry, not mutated. Well, some of them have. And, you know, and stuff. So, it's going to be interesting to see how they do that. And in fact, they've actually done the same thing in the Legions card game. They're now bringing out, they're redoing all the Legions, but as their kind of post-Heresy versions.
Yeah.
So it's clearly something, you know. You know, GW isn't silly. They're clearly like, they've given permission to someone on the IP in the IP office to say, right, okay, let's, you know, we've kind of done the early Heresy era. We're doing it really well. We've got all our fantastic models coming out. Now let's push the post-Heresy stuff. And then you've also got Primarchs in 40K. It could easily be like, what, five years away. But I can't believe they wouldn't do a Leman Russ Primarch model. I mean, it would just... it would sell like crazy.
Shit. I would lose my shit if I did that.
It would
so
sell like
good.
Mad, wouldn't it? So, oh yeah, I think it's an absolute matter of time.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how it unfolds. Now, I just realised we never actually mentioned Imperial Guard or Astra Militarum. I think it was... It's recently, certainly within the last few weeks, there was a preview for Regiments of Renown. From my understanding of it, obviously the new Codex has just come out, loads of really cool models and stuff like that. And I think the Regiments of Renown are things like Valhalla Ice Warriors. You can specifically field Valhalla Ice Warriors, and there's going to be models for those, Mordian Iron Guard and all that sort of stuff. Now, because it's a few weeks since I read it now I'm not sure whether that's in reference to there's going to be specific kits or whether it's there's going to be like a supplement for those particular regiments in a similar way that there were for, you know, Codex supplements for specific Space Marine chapters. Well, I'm not really sure. I suspect it's probably the models, because of course they're all so old. Like you think about Valhalla Ice Warrior models, they're like absolutely ancient, aren't they?
I don't think they've ever been in plastic. I think they've been in like metal, I think, was the last time I can remember seeing like Ice Warrior model. Yeah, that's a long time ago.
Yeah, so I'd be quite interested to see how that goes. And the reason I'm so interested in that specifically is I'm currently reading the Caiaphas Kane audiobooks.
Okay.
Which are brilliant. And he's of course, most of his career was with the Valhalla Ice Warriors. So I'm seriously thinking I might even create a kill team.
Nice.
Because Mark and I went halves on the kill team box set so we could learn it and start playing it. Not that we've done anything with it yet, but, you know, it's there. But I might create a kill team consisting of Caiaphas Kane, his aide Jürgen, and a unit of Valhalla Ice Warriors. I think that could be really cool.
That sounds awesome. And that's one of the things I love about Kill Team, is the fact you can do that. You know, if you do want to like just do a little modeling project or whatever, that's actually practical you can use rather than just, you know, something you can build and sort of leave without having to go like the full gung ho of an army. Yeah, you just make like a little kill team. I think why not? Like, I think that's a great shout.
So yeah, we'll have to see what happens with that. And in terms of other stuff that I'm aware of anyway, I don't think there's anything else that I can think of. There's been lots of book releases, actually. There's been some more Siege of Terror series of books. There's been definitely one of those released or about to be released. So that's all good. And there's been loads of AOS releases as well, I've noticed, in terms of books. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting stuff going on at the moment. Now that we're past the first couple of months of the year, I'll probably start getting back into sort of doing it all again properly now. But... it's been an interesting couple of months, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Like, if you follow these, you know, tarot cards and things, there could be some very interesting things coming out over the next few months as well. So, we'll see.
Cool. Well, that was awesome, mate. Thanks ever so much for being our chaos correspondent again, as usual.
The chaos corner. I managed to get some chaos in there somewhere. Yeah. You can't have a rundown without some chaos in there, mate.
Absolutely. That's wicked, mate. So, we'll see you next time, no doubt, and have a good one and speak to you soon.
Yeah, you take care, mate.
SCN Hobby World is a small independent hobby store, initially run from a small newsagent in Corby, Northamptonshire. It has since expanded to a web store. The web store offers a 20% discount on all Games Workshop models available via their trade sales and 10% discount on models available on Games Workshop's web-only store. Being added to our mailing list gives you an extra 5% discount. This can be applied to Games Workshop trade and web products as well as other product lines. We also stock products from Warlord Games and Asmodee such as Bold Action, Star Wars Legion, A Song of Ice and Fire and Marvel Crisis Protocol. As well as miniature war games, we also stock trading card games such as Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z and Magic the Gathering to name but a few. Find our web store at scnhobbyworld.com. Find us on Facebook and Instagram at SC and Hobby World. For more information, email us at scandhobbyworld@outlook.com.
So we have a special section today on the show. I'm going to welcome Rob Smith. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing very well, thanks, James. Nice to be on the show. Thanks for inviting me.
So the reason I've asked Rob to come onto the show is because he's created this, quite frankly, awesome chatbot called the Survey Skull, which enables people that use... Well, I'll let Rob explain it, actually, because obviously he created it. He knows everything about it. Suffice to say, in terms of making things accessible for gameplay for Necromunda, this is an absolute game changer for quite a few people. At least I think it will be, which is why I wanted to have Rob on to talk about it. So, Rob, over to you. Tell us about it.
Basically, what I did is I made a little chatbot that works through a messaging app called Line, which is sort of the Asian version of WhatsApp. I did it as just a little experiment. It was a demo chatbot. It was very simple. Like, you would say hello and it would say hello back. But then I was in a Necromunda campaign at the time, and we just spent so much time digging through all of those different PDFs and rulebooks and everything to find out, oh, what does a power sword do differently from a chainsword? Like, what do all these keywords and skills do? By hand, I just coded in all of the rules and the keywords. So basically what happens is you message just the keyword for a skill or a weapon trait or whatever, and it will spit back inside the app the wording for the rule. We mentioned a little bit before we started recording, but I was quite happy to hear that it's got some functionality this way. I just made it because I don't like stopping during a game to constantly leaf through books. So hearing that it's actually helping other people who can't read the books or have limited vision in that way, that's really, really cool to hear.
I mean, it really is awesome. When I saw your message initially on the Sun City Radio community group, my ears pricked up immediately. You know, I was like, oh, this could be awesome, because as you've just said, flicking through books is an absolute nightmare when you can see, let alone when you can't, and you're using the EPUB versions of the books. And, you know, it's just... It's not a nice time at all. So I know, yeah. I have mentioned this before in previous episodes. I actually go through the utterly tedious task of actually typing out document versions for myself of the particular rules, the fighter cards and things like that, so I can just open the document and use the find function in the document to actually jump to the particular rule or the particular weapon or something like that, which is great, and it works really, really well. But something like this, where I can literally just whip my phone out of my pocket, even dictate the name of a rule, which I don't know whether you'd even thought of that or not. Of course, most people would type it in, but for us, we'll often quite often dictate. So that works as well. So I think what I'll do in a minute, actually, is I'll actually demonstrate it for people so they can hear it, and obviously so you can hear it as well.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really keen to hear it as it works here, because after I made it as a chatbot, I was playing a lot in my friend's house and he's got an Alexa. So I was thinking, is there a way I could put this as like an Alexa app? I don't know anything about coding for those kind of things, though. So, yeah, this is basically a nice little shortcut that I'll use as well.
Yeah, I mean, I will often use her to roll dice for me, so my opponent can hear my dice roll rather than me using one of my tactile dice, which I then have to feel, and to feel it, I'm covering the result with my fingers. Right. So I think it's fairer for me, because I'm using an iPhone as well. I will quite often, you know, hey Siri, roll a d6.
5.
There you go. Brilliant. Just rolled a 5 for me. So that's quite useful. That combined with your Servo Skull actually is going to be really cool. Now, I've got a game of Necromunda coming up in 2 weeks' time, actually, and I thoroughly intend to use it in anger then. So I will report back.
I would love to hear back, actually, how it works out in the field, as it were.
Yeah, absolutely. So just for the listeners' benefit, I've already mentioned that it's for Necromunda, and you've done a version for Blood Bowl, haven't you?
Yes. So... I originally did one for Necromunda because of, there's no way to put it kindly, the rules bloat. I love the game, but it's in a bit of a state. So it was mostly to cut through that. But I started playing Blood Bowl 3 years ago, and yeah, it's actually my favorite, my number one game now. So I just thought, oh, I'll make one for that as well. But Blood Bowl doesn't have that many special skill rules or anything. Nothing that's super duper niche. And the things that are a bit more niche, usually within one or two games of you playing with them, you'll remember them pretty yeah, well. So I stopped using that one quite a while ago. And then, so I moved from Tokyo. I live in Kobe now. I moved 2 years ago. So I actually left my Necromunda group behind. So I haven't been playing Necromunda either.
That's a real shame, because it's so good.
we're talking about starting one up. So we've got a few people who are definitely game to give it a go. So you actually saw it in the Sump City radio chat, on Facebook, because both of those chatbots were originally hosted on a free web services hosting platform called Heroku, and it's stopped all of its free ones, its free plan, basically, in December. But I was already not really using them, so I was just like, oh, it's okay, I'll just let them slide for now. But then in the Sump City radio chat, I'd put it up there just to see if people wanted to use it. And within a month of it going down, I actually had people posting on that same thing again from maybe one or two years ago. And they're like, oh, like what happened? Like, we were using this every weekend. So I didn't actually know that I had some users who I didn't know. So yeah, I was looking around for a replacement. I got it put onto another platform, and the main impetus for that was actually for the Blood Bowl chatbot, because I don't need it to look up skills anymore, but the new league I'm joining is all Japanese language. So I thought I needed a little bit of translation help.
Ah, now that's actually the question I was going to ask. Is this all just in English, or are there multiple language options?
It's just English and then Japanese for now. Okay. Just because, yeah, that those are the two I need. So yeah, I actually was going to ask after you gave a demo, because you can try, basically ServoSkull has a Japanese function as well. If you put in a, I don't know how many of them are in there, but if you put a skill or a weapon trait name, space JP, it should give it to you in Japanese.
Really? Well, and I think we're going to have to try this out in a moment.
Yeah, I wanted to know if yours could read Japanese out loud without any preparation. So
what rules does the ServoSkull encompass?
Well, I definitely don't have the Ash Wastes in there, but I think I have everything in there for all of the house books. And then I think I updated it. Hang on, I'm actually just looking at the code now, but it's a bit long. I think I put those psychic powers from the, was it the Outlands book?
Book of the Outlands, yeah.
Yeah. So I thought I'd put them in, but I can't find them in here now, so maybe not. At the very least, it's got all of the house books.
Cool.
So all of the skills, including the house specific skills, it's got all of the weapon traits, equipment. Yeah, I forgot. I actually had a boring weekend, so I spent the whole time just putting that in. So armor, field armor, weapon accessories, extravagant goods, ServoSkulls, corpse grinder masks, territories, rackets, and then things like the Escher Chem Alchemy, yep, legendary names, Archaeo Cybernetica, Psychoteric Whispers. And then in the readme doc, at the end it just says odds and ends, for example, insanity, broken, stray shots, etc. So just sort of a grab bag.
So do you intend on expanding it any further? Say, for example, are you going to include Ash Wastes or any of the Iron Head Squat's prospectors, that sort of stuff?
I definitely will. It's just a case of when I get round to it.
It's time, isn't it? It's always the biggest issue. Yeah. It's like doing the podcast. It's time is the biggest impact on it. So I tell you what, let's see if we can get this ServoSkull powered up, shall we? Let's see what happens. For a listener's benefit, I'm an iPhone user, so I'm using VoiceOver on the iPhone. I'm assuming there's a version of this for Android, is there?
Yes, there is, yeah.
Excellent, cool. Line. Open my Line app.
Line, chess. button, keep memo, new chat, Servo Skull.
Okay, so I've opened my Line app. I've opened the Servo Skull chat, and I'm just going to flick right with one finger to move on to the edit box.
Text field, double tap to edit. Text field, is editing, insertion point at start.
There you go, so I can now edit. So I'm going to two-finger double tap to dictate and then two-finger double tap to stop it listening. So let's try rapid fire.
Nice.
Rapid fire.
Inserted rapid fire.
Okay, so that's done that. I'm going to flick right to move to the send button.
Select stickers and a send button.
Double tap. Now I'm just waiting for the little bloop noise that it makes to come back.
I should have warned you about that, actually, because it's on a free server. So the first message you send it usually takes a minute for it to wake up. And then subsequent messages after that, it's kind of listening for you.
Ah, that's good to know. Okay, so it's come back. So let's see what it says.
When firing with a rapid fire weapon, a successful hit roll scores a number of hits equal to the number of bullet holes on the fire-powered dice. In addition, the controlling player can roll more than one fire-powered dice, up to the number shown in brackets. For example, when firing a rapid fire, two, weapon, up to two fire-powered dice can be rolled. Make an ammo check for each ammo symbol that is rolled. If any of them fail, the gun runs out of ammo. If two or more of them fail, the gun has jammed and cannot be used for the rest of the battle. If a rapid fire weapon scores more than one hit, the hits can be split between multiple targets. The first must be allocated to the initial target, but the remainder can be allocated to other fighters within three of the first, who are also within range and line of sight. These must not be any harder to hit than the original target. If a target in the open is hit, an obscure target cannot have hits allocated to it. Allocate all of the hits before making any wound rolls.
Well, that is awesome. That's the entire rapid fire rule, as far as I'm aware. That is the entire rule, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. That's really, really cool. I'm really happy to hear that. That's awesome.
Let's try something else.
Backstab.
Yeah.
Text field. Double tap to edit.
Backstab.
Insert a backstab. Select sticker, send.
So it's come back, so here's backstab.
Servo skull button. If the attacker is not within the target's vision arc, add one to the attack's strength.
There you go.
Yeah.
Nice and concise. That's what we want. Yeah. Not a load of extra wordy stuff. Let's do one last thing. So we've done a weapon trait. Well, we've done two weapon traits. What could we do? We could do a... Let's do a skill, shall we? Now, I'm an Escher player, so let's try something cool from there.
Spring up is a classic.
Yeah, spring up, yes. I did notice in your comment on the SCR community group, I think you said something like there's some wiggle room with regard to hyphens. Now, I'm pretty sure that spring up's got a hyphen in it in the book.
It identifies it through regex. So if you put a hyphen in or a space or... A lot of them, even if you just have it as one word, I've given it some flexibility for that.
Ah, splendid. Right, let's try it, because this is one I haven't actually tried, so. Spring up.
Inserted spring up. Select stick send button.
There you go, that's come back immediately.
If this fighter is pinned when they're activated, make an initiative check for them. If the check is passed, the fighter can make a stand-up basic action for free. If the check is failed, the fighter may still stand up, but it costs one action, as usual.
Well, that is awesome. So that's there you go. That's a very, very brief demonstration for the listeners and indeed for you. So I'm just going to close that.
That's really cool. Yeah. So it's just, it does take a little bit of while, like just a little bit of time for it to come back the first time. But after that, you saw it got much, much quicker.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I think it doesn't go back to sleep over the course of time that a game would take. So once you do the first, you should be all right. It's just if it goes idle for, I think it's something like 2 hours, but I'm honestly not sure.
Oh, cool. Okay. Oh, yeah. You can normally have killed your opponent within 2 hours, can't you?
Maybe you can. I mean, I was having a lot of trouble.
No, that's cool. I mean, it's an awesome, awesome resource. And I would encourage anybody, I mean, anybody in general, but particularly if you've got a visual impairment or you have issues, you know, reading the physical books, or you don't like scrolling through the EPUBs or anything like that, this little Servo Skull chatbot is flipping awesome. You do need Line, the Line app. People with vision impairment, just for your awareness, installing the Line app is no problem at all. Setting it up is not the easiest in the world because the screen isn't particularly well labeled in terms of accessibility. However, with a couple of minutes of fiddling about, you shouldn't have any problem at all. It took me less than 5 minutes to get it all set up, have a profile set up and everything like that. And then it was just a case of scanning the QR code for the Servo Skull. And then that was it. It was added, and I gave it permission, and it's rocking and rolling, as you've just heard.
Unfortunately, right now, the easiest way to add ServoSkull is through the QR code, which might be a bit of an issue for people with visual impairment.
It really isn't. What? So I can only use VoiceOver as an example here, because I'm only a VoiceOver user, obviously. Mm-hmm. But when I move the focus of VoiceOver onto the QR code, it recognizes it as, it will say, image, pattern squares, or something like that, it says anyway. Mm-hmm. So I know that a QR code basically visually looks like that. So then what I was able to do is open that image. Now, this is something that's well worth mentioning. You can't scan the QR code on the same device that you're installing the Lime app on. That's what I found anyway. So what I did was I had the QR code open on my iPad, and I opened the QR code scan option in the Lime app on my iPhone, and then basically did it with that. So what it does is the iPhone detects it, and VoiceOver says QR code detected, or words to that effect. It makes a little ching noise, and then it all happens. So it's actually very, very easy. You know, you just need to get the QR code in the first place. So what's the best way of people actually getting the QR code? Would you be able to send me a copy or something so I can whack it up on my notes?
Absolutely.
For the show?
That probably sounds like the easiest way to do it.
And what I can do then is I can share it on our social media as well. So Twitter, Facebook, and I'll put it in the show notes here as well. Obviously, it's already available on the Some City Radio community group for the Necromunda players. For the Blood Bowl players, if they want to use the Blood Bowl version, where can they get the QR code? Well, I suppose you can send me both.
I'll send you both. That one's called Nuffle Demon. The demon is the Games Workshop spelling.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you could maybe try searching for that online. That might work.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, because it's basically just an image file, isn't it? So it's nice and easy to deal with.
I made like a little website. I'll send you the link for that as well, which is quite convenient for going to the trading post in Necromunda. And I basically just made a web page for that because I didn't like the way that Yak Tribe put all of the black market and regular shop stuff together.
Right.
You can filter out the illegal stuff, but the black market also has some things that are just rare.
Yes.
And I just went a little bit crazy with that, and I was like, okay, so you can set some parameters. So if you have like, oh, I have 115 creds to spend, you can put that much in and you can see what you can get and what kind of rarity rolls.
Fantastic. Yeah, Yak Tribe's one of these resources that I know an awful lot of people use it. I cannot use it as a screen reader user. It is just awful. Yeah, I just can't. I've tried multiple times, just can't do it. So that's why I revert back to the good old-fashioned make my own documents and use the search function kind of thing. But then at least I can format them how I want. We all will find our ways around these things. So
yeah, so... And I was basically just doing exactly the same thing. I was just like, I find it too annoying to deal with all of this after every single game. So I just made like a little thing to help.
Yeah, and it really is awesome. Send them across and I'll certainly get them circulated. And I've no doubt that the guys in the Some City Radio crew will as well. I just realised we didn't try the Japanese language, did we?
I was going to ask, yeah. It's like maybe
let's
a little...
Double tap to insertion point. Right, so what should we do... Should we do versatile? So let me just get this right. I can dictate my word, so versatile in this case, and then I need to do a space and then JP together. Yeah. Capitals, JP because they're not really matter.
Doesn't matter if it's capitals, but yeah, no spaces and no periods.
Yeah, okay, let's try that then. So this is the, in theory, going to be the Japanese language version of versatile once I've done it. So let's see what happens. Versatile.
Inserting versatile. Space. Space. H. J. J. U. I. O. P. Send button.
Then we have a result. Now, I'm guessing that said, a fighter fight... No, I have no idea what that says. That is awesome. That is so good.
That's really cool. I can't believe it just has Japanese in there already. That's amazing.
Well, I mean, the iPhone's got ridiculously good language capability anyway. Right. So I know you can ask it to translate stuff just through Siri. So, and I know Japanese is one of those languages, but that is awesome. So if you're up for this, with every guest I have to the show, I have this little fun, silly little quickfire quiz thing. Are you up for it?
Absolutely.
So would you like questions for Age of Sigmar, 40K, or Necromunda? I'm afraid we haven't got Blood Bowl questions because none of us play Blood Bowl. So I can't really ask you that.
First of all, I should encourage you to play Blood Bowl then, because it is an amazing game. It's a lot of fun.
Do you know what? I played it. It's got to be 20 years ago. I had a single game of Blood Bowl at a local game store, and it was so much fun. But I could never find anybody to play it with me.
So when I moved down here, there wasn't a Blood Bowl scene, but I had got bitten by the bug. I'd only been playing it for 1 year, just with some buddies. We just played on a kitchen table, and I came down here and I was like, it is absolutely unacceptable that I cannot play Blood Bowl anymore. So I immediately just started my own league. Now I'm joining a Japanese language one. So yeah, I think that sort of tells you all you need to know. But Blood Bowl is a bit like Mordheim. It's just one of those games, if you mention in whichever sort of gaming circles you run in, like, hey, I'd like to try doing a Blood Bowl league, you will have a minimum of 50% of the people being like, ooh, awesome. I've always wanted to try that. It's not too hard to get the ball rolling. It does kind of sell itself. 100% Necromunda.
Okie dokie. Limber up. Are you ready?
All right.
Stealthy and cunning, or loud and proud?
Stealthy and cunning, 100%.
Nice. Guns and grenades, or blades and boots?
I'm going to go with blades and boots. I was a Gene Sealer Cultists player, in case you can't guess.
Ah, well, next question is going to be interesting then. The best gang in the Underhive is?
Well, I think I already answered that one. Two arms good, four arms better.
Nice. If I were a Necromunda model, I would be a...
I, of course, want to stay some sort of Gene Stealer Cult alpha, but I think I'd be more a Gene Stealer Cult familiar, unfortunately. I'm very sort of creepy and goblin-y.
Okay. I'll take your word for it. I can't see you. And my weapons and equipment of choice would be?
There's a lot of things that would be very, very cool, but I think twin auto pistols, just for the style. I've loved those since I was...
Twin gunslinger,
the two.
There's something so cinematic about it, isn't there?
It really, really is.
And as you're a Genius Dealer Cults player, the true emperor is
in the stars.
Nice. That's it. Just a little bit of fun. It's really, really interesting doing that with people. Rob, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show, and thank you for producing such an awesome, awesome little tool that's going to help an awful lot of people, I'm sure, you know, everybody, not just the likes of me, but it really is awesome.
Thanks very much for having me.
You're welcome back anytime. And please do keep us up to date with anything that's going on with the Servo Skull for either Necromunda or Blood Bowl, of course. And I'll get those QR codes out there and your website link and everything, and hopefully we can get some more people using this awesome little tool.
Also, if you have any requests, because those little chatbots are actually very easy to put together, so if you think there's a little niche to be filled, let me know and I'll see if I can whip something up.
That's awesome. Well, you heard it there first, folks. He's left himself wide open for people messaging him now.
I really have, haven't I?
Yeah, it's just like, do you want to withdraw that comment, Rob? No, that's awesome. Thanks ever so much for joining me. It's been great.
Yeah, it's been great being on. Thanks a lot.
Finally, this episode, we've got another short story for you. It's all about Mark's seek and destroy roleplay character, Brother Uriel, who's a Blood Angel. Unfortunately, Brother Uriel died in a previous mission. However, this story covers one of his best moments in earlier missions. So, without further ado, I give you Death from Above. Death from Above, written and read by James Goldsworthy. Copyright 2023. The kill team had gained access to the massive Ork Rock simply by bullying their way onto a landing deck in their somewhat battered Thunderhawk gunship. Once the myriad of Orks and Gretchen on the deck had realised what was happening, resistance became extremely strong. After disembarking from the ship, the team had immediately dispersed, gunning down Gretchen and Ork alike. Techmarine Hakan had fought his way to a rudimentary control panel that had been positioned on the very edge of the deck. He was currently trying to override the atmospheric energy shield which cut off the deck from the void. Room Priest Stormeye had remained on the open ramp of the Thunderhawk, arms raised aloft, conjuring a blizzard in an attempt to protect his battle brothers. The Dark Angel, Valak, had roared forward on his bike, opening up with twin bolt guns, whilst Uriel had boosted forward on his jump pack, engaging in close quarters with a group of Gretchen before moving on. The fighting had got more intense as more and more Orks became aware of their presence and flooded the deck in a bid to remove the threat. Once Hakan had gained entry to the deck's systems and dropped the barrier to the void, things had become significantly easier. Dozens of greenskins, large and small, were swept out into the void, their feral curses and screeches fading as they were dragged out. Fuel bowsers wheeled tool caskets, spanners, hammers, fighters, bombers, and transports had immediately been dragged out into the blackness or were in the process of carving their way forward to the opening. Uriel boosted off of one of these ships and gained access to a gantry approximately 15 meters up one of the sheer rock walls. He could see his battle brothers. Techmarine Hakan maglocked to the deck, hunched over the control panel. Valak and his bike hunkered down behind a large support column, doing his best to avoid being struck by the detritus being dragged outwards. The Rune Priest, now on the deck, feet braced and maglocked, conjuring a kind shield which deflected the worst of the deluge. More than half a minute passed before the energy shield suddenly snapped back into place and the vacuum was cut off. Unidentifiable mechanical components dropped to the ground as gravity reasserted itself. Casting his eyes around the huge open space, Uriel couldn't see a single greenskin. His vox chimed within his helm.
"What do you see from up there, Uriel?"
came the Fenrisian's unmistakable voice. Uriel scanned the scene for a few more seconds before replying. "I see a vehicle access bulkhead approximately 240 meters to the rear of the chasm. No movement, no greenskins."
"Confirmed. Moving forward,"
came the Tech Marine's reply, scouting forward to locate entries to the main part of the rock, came Valak's reply a moment before the roar of his bike's engine echoed through the chasm.
"Confirmed, brothers. Moving up. Uriel, are you able to locate any possible exits on the upper levels?"
came the Rune Priest's response. The Blood Angel activated his chainsword and boosted up into the next level before responding.
"Aye, brother."
The unit moved forward steadily. The hangar deck was clear, and they needed to get into the main body of the rock before a stronger force was able to throw them back. The quiet was broken by Valak's voice over the vox.
"Nothing up here but the bulkhead. Holding position. Looks like the only way out to ground level."
The unit confirmed one by one and continued their sweep. Several minutes passed as the Tech Marine and the Rune Priest joined Brother Valak. Brother Uriel had almost completed his sweep on the upper levels when the unmistakable sound of a bulkhead activation echoed across the vast open space. Holding his position and cocking his head to one side, he watched as the bulkhead door slid open, revealing three killer cans.
Immediately the door was clear of their weapons, they opened up on the kill team. Rounds chewed into the deck and equipment that his battle brothers were taking cover behind. But it only took a second before their return fire began to find its mark. Mass reactive shells detonated against the hulls of the bizarre humanoid walkers as they strode forward. Brother Valak gunned his engine and shot from behind the cover of the column, unloading round after round of bolter fire into the abomination nearest to his position. It peeled off, and an all too deadly game of cat and mouse began. The remaining two walkers were clearly intent on closing with the Tech Marine and the Rune Priest. Uriel watched as the Rune Priest threw back his head and howled, baring his fangs to his enemy and breaking cover. Only a few seconds later, Tech Marine Hakan also broke cover and charged at the remaining Killer Cat. Switching his attention back to the Dark Angel, now engaged in close combat, he had been knocked from his bike and was currently parrying blows from a large mechanical claw with his power fist. Uriel nodded and, holstering his bolt pistol, drew a frag grenade from his belt. As he ignited his jump pack, he announced over the squad vox, "Death from above!" 6 seconds later, he slammed onto the dreadnought wannabe that was so badly pressing his Dark Angel brother. Driving his chainsaw down through the top hatch, he tore it aside. It took a couple of seconds for the Gretchen within it to realize what was happening. Uriel couldn't help but chuckle at the utterly astonished expression on the green-skinned runt's face as it looked up at him. Uriel engaged the activation stud on the frag grenade and dropped it into the crew compartment before boosting away to engage his next target. He'd flown perhaps 10 meters before the unmistakable boom crump of the grenade going off told him that there was now one less threat to deal with. His jump boost had taken him to some sort of small transport ship, and as he touched down he engaged his maglocks before assessing his next move. The Tech Marine was faring well against his opponent, his omniscient power axe and servo arm proving effective against the heavily armored opponent. The Rune Priest, however, was not faring so well. His ancient suit of Terminator armor was proof against almost everything his mechanical adversary could throw at him, but he didn't seem to be able to effectively penetrate the thing's hull. He had no doubt that the Mighty Wolf would be able to overcome it eventually, but time was of the essence, and they needed to get into the main body of the rock before even more orcs found them. Uriel ignited his jump pack once more. His landing hadn't been as perfect as he would have liked, but he had managed to gain purchase on the roof of the abomination, and again used his chainsaw to carve open the top hatch. This time, the pilot had no idea of its imminent demise, and was blissfully unaware as the frag grenade dropped into his lap, before detonating 2 seconds later. Uriel had boosted away in that time, and had intended to go and assist his Tech Marine brother, but on landing, noted that Hakan had already dispatched his opponent. Unholstering his bolt pistol, Uriel turned to the open bulkhead and ignited his jump pack before calling over the squad vox, "Come, brothers! Time is of the essence!"
That's it for this episode. Thanks as always for listening. Don't forget to like and leave us a review. It really helps us get more listeners. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. And if you want to get in touch, drop us an email at +1tohitpodcast@gmail.com and we'd love to hear from you. So until next time, may the dice gods be with you.